What I needed was to escape this thimble-sized space. And once I did, I needed a weapon of my own, such as that knife, sheathed again at his waist, opposite his sword. With my free hand, I felt for the knife's handle, but he moved before I could take it. The banished burst into my room with loud, angry voices. I didn't know how many there were, but the bedroom seemed to shake under their combined weight. I must have dug my nails into Simon's hand, because he flinched until I loosened my grip.
"We've come for Kestra Delasor,"
one of the men said.
"Where is she?"
I knew that voice. His name was Tor. Torn. Or Thorn? Thorn. When I was taken from Woodcourt 3 years ago, he was the one who had grabbed me. I still remembered his rough hand over my mouth. The small box where he'd hidden me. The fear? Simon's hand shifted to my back, and I realized I was shaking. His fingers were confident, each tip sending a pulse up my spine, trying to communicate that if I remained still, everything would be all right. Everything would be all right. He seemed to believe that. And somehow I believed it too. I believed him. How strange that feeling was. In some ways, Simon was very different from the boy I remembered from so long ago. Stronger, and with an air of confidence he never used to have. But now he was gentle, even kind, as he always was when we were children. I knew he was only doing this to protect Tanger's plan, but I wanted to believe a part of him was doing this to protect me. I had to win against the Korax, obviously. But I regretted the consequences to Simon, who would have to lose, beginning with losing his knife. I still planned to get it. The problem was the commotion happening just outside this tiny room.
"Lady Kestra has been missing from Entora for years. She isn't here."
The innkeeper was a worse liar than me, if that was possible.
"Are you sure?"
I could hear the smile in Thorn's voice.
"Give the lady up, or as the heavens are my witness, you will die."
Chapter 10. Simon. I should have made Trina come into this space with Kestra. Not me. Not with our history. Not a breath away from me. This was too close. Kestra's heart pounded against mine, and with every breath I inhaled the cinnamon scent of her hair. A thin line of moonlight teased at the angle of her jaw and highlighted her dark lashes. If I didn't know who she was, I would... But I did know. I knew her far too well. Kestra's breaths were still shallow and too fast, too panicked. My hand moved to her face, my fingers brushing against her cheek. It wasn't a gesture of affection, but it did seem to calm her. It did the very opposite to me. As she relaxed, her body began molding to mine, impossibly becoming closer than before. Every shift of her position left me increasingly unsettled and distracted. A dangerous combination. In the outer room, Trina was in far more danger. If I could have stayed in the room to help her, I would have. But if I had, they'd know Kestra was here too.
"I'll ask you again," one of the men said. "Where is Kestra?"
The innkeeper seemed to be at a loss for words, but Trina quickly filled in. "I'm Lady Kestra's handmaiden. She was here until about 2 hours ago. Then she heard of an approaching threat. You, I assume, and rode on with her guard for Highwind. They'll be there by morning."
"Her carriage is still outside," a man said.
"They left by Oropod. Naturally, it's faster."
"Oropods," the man snorted. "Evil creatures born of dark magic. Kestra agreed to travel on one?"
Trina's voice rose in pitch.
"I'm telling you the truth, sir. If my lady were here, do you think I'd have been allowed in this bed?"
"We have a gift for her in this sack. Something Darrow wanted."
Kestra's attention was immediately drawn to the mention of her servant's name. When she realized I had noticed, she looked away, but her breaths became harsher than before.
"What is the gift?" Trina asked. "Give it to me, and I'll see that my lady gets it."
Tell me where Kestra really is, and I'll give it to her myself.
When Trina remained silent, he said to the other Haldarians with him,
Search this inn, every room. Kill anyone who stands in your way.
Kestra tried to push past me, obviously wanting to surrender herself, but I pressed her back to the wall. This was not negotiable. I felt the same ache for the guests here as she did, but her promise to find the Olden Blade was bigger than this one moment, and ultimately would save more lives than might be lost tonight. Footsteps pounded into the hallway, though it sounded as if at least one man had remained in the bedroom. He seemed to be making a cursory search, though with such spare furnishings, he shouldn't be out there for long. Kestra touched my cheek to get my attention. If only she knew how much she already had it. She motioned again that she wanted to leave this passage. I gave her hand a firm squeeze, then pressed it flat against my chest, where she could feel my heartbeat. A heartbeat was life, and all that mattered now was to remind her she was alive, and would remain so if she stayed quiet. It seemed to calm her a bit, so I left it there. Would she notice the quickening of its pace? The way each beat seemed to beg her to come closer. Kestra began breathing more evenly again, and her eyes closed as if she was deep in thought. I took the chance to steal another look at her, to ask myself who she really was. A cipher. A lockbox. A girl who'd obviously learned long ago how to keep her guard up. She wasn't always this way. I remembered that. Then she opened her eyes, letting them drift to mine like a rising dawn. Her stare was heat, melting away my defenses, exposing more than I'd ever intended for her to see. The real me, flawed and too often foolish, and funneled into a life of rebellion. Certain of nothing but the weight of her hand on my chest. Aware of nothing but the softening of her expression, the parting of her lips. Her other hand wrapped around my waist, though I noticed a slight tremble of her fingers, nervous, anticipating. I was nervous too. Something about her had gotten beneath my skin, like an itch that couldn't be scratched. And that was hard enough when she was across the room or out of my sight. But here, now, the itch was unbearable. Every instinct within me shouted to turn away from her, to keep her out of my mind, and certainly nowhere near my heart. I knew exactly who and what she was, and I had some idea of Tengger's ultimate plans for her. Only a fool would pretend that she was any kind of heroine, or that her past crimes should be forgiven. Yet she wasn't a villain, either. She seemed genuinely concerned for her servants, and had just tried to sacrifice herself rather than put anyone else at risk. On my darkest days at Woodcourt, she used to smile for me. And the way she was looking at me now, drawing me in, a willing moth to the flame. This was the girl who'd nearly gotten me killed 6 years ago. The girl who surely had been making plans to try again since the first second of her capture. She could not be trusted. I knew that. Just as I knew I should not be leaning into her. Kissing her was the last thing on my mind. But there it was. On my mind. Something in the bedroom made a sudden crashing sound. We startled apart. The moment severed between us.
I know you, girl, the Haldarian in the room said. Don't I?
Trina murmured something inaudible and laughed nervously, but Kestra caught my unguarded reaction. There shouldn't be any reason for a Haldarian to recognize Trina. A new man entered the room, reporting,
She's not here. Maybe she did leave.
Is Kestra hiding somewhere?
This was the first man speaking again, more sharply now.
This is your last chance to answer.
It wasn't clear whether that question was addressed to the innkeeper or to Trina. But the innkeeper made a high-pitched gasp.
I serve the Dallaser family as they serve the Lord of the Dominion.
His denial was followed by a sharp cry. Just as before, Kestra tried to push forward, but I held her back. She shook her head, her eyes filling with tears. She pushed at me again, but I cupped my hand around the back of her neck and drew her to me. Her head turned sideways against my chest, and the desperate clutch of her hand on my arm soothed some of the anger within me. I held her tighter as her body trembled with sorrow, but she remained quiet.
Don't kill me.
The innkeeper's pained voice pled for mercy.
If you have any message for Lady Kestra, tell it to me. I will be sure she hears it.
The Haldarians are organizing, and we're coming for her again, a man said. To anyone who stands between us, that is the message.
Trina cried out as the innkeeper grunted and a body fell to the floor.
Had they killed him?
Kestra pulled away from me, her expression one of horror. As much as she wanted to get out of this hiding place, surely those men had made it clear how deadly serious they were about finding her. She had the same seriousness about her as well. She raised a knife. My knife, in fact. Stolen from the sheath at my waist. I scowled, knowing I'd been tricked. We'd deal with that issue later, because I guaranteed there'd be a fight about this. But for now, I grabbed her arm and pressed it against the back wall, which instantly cracked. The brittle wood was older than I'd thought. Kestra's eyes sparked. She wouldn't dare.
No,
I quietly warned. But she did. She raised a leg and kicked it backward against the same panel. The wood didn't break entirely, but it splintered enough to let a wisp of air through.
What was that? The first man asked. You all stay here and find out where that sound came from. I'll go outside.
He must have been talking to the other Haldarians in the room. I grabbed Kestra's shoulders, hoping to stop her from breaking through to the outside wall, but her expression was fully defiant. When she kicked backward again, a small hole opened. Behind it, the trunk of the oak tree could be seen. The Haldarians began pounding on the right side of the wall, trying to break in. They'd eventually find the door. Kestra kicked yet again, widening the hole.
There'll be more of them outside, I hissed. You'll fall right into their arms. Come out, a new man ordered, addressing me. I have your girl.
Trina gasped, so I knew the threat was real.
I can't open the panel, she shrieked. I don't know how it's done.
Furious at Kestra, who was still bent on widening the hole she'd made, I shoved open the secret door, drew the sword that had been at my side, and charged into the room. The man closest to me was wiry in build, carrying a horseman's axe that most Haldarians favored. He raised his weapon, still coated in the innkeeper's blood. So far, Trina appeared to be safe. I took the aggressor's stance and locked blades with him. From the corner of my eye, I saw Trina lunge toward the secret cupboard, but Kestra was already climbing through the hole, which was barely wide enough to squeeze through. I didn't know if Kestra could make the jump between the hole and the tree, but it was clear she intended to try. While I finished this fight, Trina would have to follow Kestra.
You're insane! Trina scowled.
I'll survive. Kestra's words were clearly a taunt. Not sure if you will.
Kestra?
Getting his first good look at her, my opponent seemed to forget about everyone else in the room.
You must come with us!
I used the distraction to thrust my blade into the man's gut, feeling his pain for myself as I always did. He fell, but other footsteps pounded up the stairs. More Haldarians. My only option was the hole Kestra had made. She must have made a successful jump, because Trina immediately followed. Through the hole in the wall, I heard Trina say,
I hate you, Kestra. I really do.
By the time I got to the hole, Kestra had already shinnied to the ground and was wrangling one of the Haldarians' horses. Trina was shouting at her to hurry, that more Haldarians were coming. There was no time to think, or even to beg the heavens' forgiveness before I jumped. The first tree branch I grabbed quaked beneath my weight, then broke almost immediately. I fell past three or four other branches, failing to slow myself down, then landed on a thicker branch below it. And from there, simply dropped to the ground. The bruising in my feet tomorrow would be brutal. To get into the saddle, Kestra had used my knife to lengthen an existing tear in her skirt halfway up her leg. The fact that she knew how to ride astride was surprising. Girls of her status all rode side saddle if they rode at all. But Kestra knew exactly what she was doing. Another problem I'd have to deal with after we escaped. If we escaped. Meanwhile, Trina had taken the reins of another horse into her hands and shooed the rest of the horses away. She was making it impossible for the men to follow, which they would try to do. I already heard yelling that we were outside. I scrambled to my feet, and although Kestra tried to maneuver her horse away from me, I got hold of one rein and yanked the horse toward me.
I swung into the saddle behind her and wrapped the horse's side with my heels.
"I can handle this horse just fine," she scowled.
"Why don't you get your own?"
"Because I know you can handle this horse just fine. Were you escaping with us or from us?"
I sped up the horse enough to discourage her from attempting to slide off, then called to Trina.
"Let's get off the road."
Trina checked the skies.
"The moon will go behind the clouds soon. We'll have the darkness on our side."
We left the road and headed into a patch of weeds, which would openly expose us. But if we weren't spotted, we'd soon be in the trees where it would be much easier to hide. Trina was keeping up behind us, though she was hissing at Kestra the whole time.
"You never should have kicked through that wall. You gave away your hiding place."
"I had to, based on the stellar way you were handling things," Kestra snapped. We angled back toward the inn. Trina cursed my decision until she understood my intention. The building would mask us. The men would likely split up to search the area, but I doubted they'd think to look behind the inn itself. It would have been better to enter All Spirits Forest on the opposite side of the road. Magic was said to exist there, both for good and for evil. For that reason, the Haldarians wouldn't be stupid enough to follow us in. But I wasn't stupid either. As soon as we were deep enough into the woods behind the inn, I growled at Kestra.
"Kicking out that panel could have gotten us all killed, including you."
"Well, maybe you should have threatened someone else," she replied with equal force.
"I'm sorry this kidnapping isn't going the way you wanted. Did you also want to thank me for saving your lives back there, or are you angry about that too?"
"I'm definitely angry," I said, and I meant it. Despite that, I smiled. "But maybe one day I'll return the favor and save your life." She frowned back.
"Coming from someone who's currently threatening my life, you'll forgive me for doubting you."
For a moment, I'd forgotten that we were on opposite sides of this rebellion. And yes, that if anything went wrong with the plan, I had my orders from Tengger. But the first night with Kestra wasn't over, and I'd already begun to wonder if I could fulfill those orders.
Chapter 11. Kestra. Simon led us over a small hill where the brush became too thick to continue. We moved slower now, which helped to soothe everyone's ragged nerves. By the time Simon stopped, both he and Trina seemed as tired as I felt, too weary to argue anymore.
"They won't find us here," Simon said. "I think we're safe to rest and wait out the night."
Hopefully he was right. I ignored Trina's complaints about how she hadn't slept for even an hour back at the inn. Did she think I'd have sympathy, or that I'd care? Thanks to her, I'd barely slept at all. The exhaustion was making me dizzy. Simon dismounted, and this time I did accept his steadying hands at my waist. That was better than falling onto the ground, which I might have done. But rather than releasing me, his grip tightened.
"Give me that knife."
I didn't want to.
"A knife is the most basic of weapons,"
Darrow once taught me.
"Learn it first and learn it well."
I pulled my hand free from Simon's and backed away. "What if they come again?" Neither of them had an answer for that. "No one knows we're here," Trina finally said. "They came to the inn because your servant told them you'd be there. Darrow betrayed you." "He wouldn't. There must be another explanation."
"He betrayed you, princess."
Simon had begun tying up the horses and barely looked at me as he spoke.
"Get used to that. There's nobody you can trust."
"Including you two?" Trina snorted. "If you ever try a trick like that again, trust me to make your kidnapping seem like a birthday party." Simon walked up to me, the curl of his lip a clear signal of how little patience he had left. I raised the knife to defend myself, but he grabbed my forearm, pinching until he forced the weapon's release.
"Get some sleep, princess."
"Stop calling me that! You know I'm nothing of the sort." I sat down against a tree and stifled a yawn. "The Lord of the Dominion rules alone."
"As long as you act like a spoiled princess, that's what I'll call you," he said.
I swallowed every retort that would have started yet another fight, then turned away from them both, hoping when I woke up, all of this would have been a dream. Burying myself into the folds of my cloak, I realized this was nothing so simple as dreaming. My life had become a nightmare. Simon shook me awake before dawn. Instinctively, I flung out a fist, catching his shoulder hard enough to knock him backward. He chuckled as he rolled back to his feet.
Not a morning person, I see.
I reclined again, eager for even a minute or two more of sleep. Go away.
It's a 5-hour ride to Highwind. Stand up or I'll pull you to your feet.
I've got to figure out an excuse for the slit in my gown and wounds on my wrists. If my father sees me this way, I'll be in serious trouble. Come back in an hour. He grabbed my hand and pulled me to a sitting position. I opened my eyes, more irritated than awake. At least he looked as tired as I felt. Trina came into focus behind him, in a yellow dress trimmed with a beaded blue sash. My dress. My sash. Both of which had been left behind at the inn. That got my attention, and I stood pointing at her.
Where did you get that?
She pointed to a clump of bushes nearby. A blue dress with a patterned skirt and cropped vest had been laid over it, kept off the damp morning ground.
You went back for these?
I asked. Simon did during the night. This blue dress has very long sleeves. We think they'll cover your wrists. Simon reached into a pocket of his trousers and pulled out a handful of gold coins.
I also found these in your trunk. My payment for having to deal with you.
The sack that Thorn, one of the banished, brought to the inn. Did you get that too?
His gaze remained steady.
There was nothing in it of value. Only a lure to draw you out from your hiding place.
What was it?
He shook his head.
I already told you, nothing of value. Get dressed. I'll go water the horses.
After he'd left, Trina tossed the blue dress at me. I thrust it back at her.
You're my lady-in-waiting. You dress me.
She threw it at me again.
I'm not your maid. Dress yourself.
If you want anyone to believe you're a maid, you'd better know how to do it.
Maybe you're the one who doesn't know.
Trina's smile became smug.
That's the truth, isn't it? You don't know how to dress yourself.
I knew how to do it, obviously. I just never had to do it. But it was irrelevant. I didn't see how the ability to dress oneself mattered. If Trina was my superior, then how had she failed to notice the leaves in the back of her hair from where she'd slept? I tossed the dress onto another bush and started walking away.
When we arrive at Woodcourt, I'm going to blame you for my appearance. I assume you know what happens to lazy servants of the Dallasaurs.
Trina muttered a string of curse words, all of them aimed at me, and then grabbed the blue dress. This one was more complicated to put on than most, with crossed ribbons on the front that needed to be laced at the back. A row of buttons also ran up the spine, tiny enough to frustrate even the most patient servant. I wouldn't be surprised if Trina quit before she finished dressing me. Celia had threatened to do just that the last time I'd chosen to wear this dress. Celia. I wondered what was happening to her right now. Her screams still haunted me.
Before we leave, we should talk about your first task once you're home, Trina said. Somewhere inside your father's home is a diary that I need to read.
Whose diary?
I can only say what it looks like.
I rolled my eyes. By chance, will it look like a book? If this was a sample of what it would be like to work with Trina, I would soon die from prolonged exposure to idiocy. Trina's impatience took the form of an extra hard pull on the ribbons of my dress.
It will be covered in pink satin with flowers hand-sewn into the fabric.
A woman's diary, then, I mused.
Risha Haldarian's?
Perhaps. Or Anaya's, her servant, who went into the dungeons with her. Anaya was Endrian, just like Endric. Maybe her magic allowed her to hide the diary.
Her magic could save a diary, but not her mistress's life.
I chuckled, communicating how ridiculous I thought this entire notion was. If you're right and Risha brought a diary into the Woodcourt dungeons, what do you suppose happened to it? Do you think she was given an ink and quill, and perhaps a comfortable sofa where she could recline as she wrote out her plan to kill Lord Endric?
She said, "Just find that book. It will lead us to the Oldenblade."
Trina tugged at another ribbon,
cursing me for owning such a complicated gown, as if I'd care that she was irritated. If anything, I was disappointed in myself for not having been awful enough to make her abandon this plan, just to get away from me. It wasn't for lack of trying. She added, "The diary might have belonged to someone else, too. All I can tell you is that it's vital to our plan. We find it, and we find the Olden Blade." I sighed again, louder this time. "Let's pretend you're right, because there has to be a first time for everything. And there's some special diary at Woodcourt containing the secret to all the mysteries of life. If it's just there to be read, then it's been studied 1,000 times, searched for any clues about the location of the Olden Blade. But you, who probably can't read your own name, think you will find something new in those pages." "I will." Trina was all business, just as she was all heart. By then, Trina was working on my hair, pulling at it so roughly that I fully expected to be bald before she finished. When she had formed it into a clumsy sort of plait, she said, "Beauty hides your ugly heart." I swerved on her. "Is this about those 40 people my father executed? Because if so, if I listed all the reasons I hate you, we'd be here until sundown. Let's go find Simon." At least that meant we were leaving. I'd choose a torture rack over spending another minute alone with Trina. Simon was saddling the horses as we arrived. I assumed our travel would take place as it had last night, with Trina on one horse and Simon and I on the other. That way he could keep control of me, or believe that he was. "I have questions," I began. "Are the banished still in the area? Do they know you're after the blade?"
"It's more important to focus on what happens when we get to Highwon."
He barely looked at me as he spoke.
"Your story will be that these attempted a robbery of the inn. Darrow was killed, but I rescued you and your handmaiden here. Don't say anything more specific than that."
I huffed. I was being entirely honest before Simon. This plan, to get the dagger, will fail. We can't just walk into the dungeons and ask to search them. And even if we do, we won't find it because it's not there. "Please, go back to Tangor and release my servants. It might be the only chance any of us has to survive."
"Get on the horse or we'll drag you behind it,"
Simon said.
"We're not giving up."
He didn't know it yet, but those words were about to become his biggest problem. Because I wasn't giving up either. Not even close.
Chapter 12. Simon. Kestra rode side saddle in front of me, with Trina on the mount behind us. I held my arms away from her as I managed the reins, unnecessary inconvenience. Foolishly, I'd lowered my guard with her last night, which could have gotten us killed. I wasn't about to let that happen again. We rode in silence, with thick woods on one side and a vast stretch of farmland on the other, probably owned by loyalists who were granted use of the land in exchange for the donation of soldiers to the Dominion. Lower-class Antorans could farm, but before they pulled their first crop from the ground, half of the land's yield would go to the Dominion. Some of it would end up on Kestra's supper table, without her asking once where it had come from. She turned back to me with a mischievous smile. "You're afraid of me. I can tell." "No, I wasn't going to play. I'm not afraid of you, Princess."
"Yes, you are."
I grimaced. "Why do you think that?"
"It's obvious by the way your arms hover around me. As if touching me is dangerous."
"It is. I learned that last night." Her smile darkened.
"That was nothing.
End this now while you still can." If only I could. The horses were keeping up a brisk, constant pace, and every step closer to Highwon quickened the pounding of my heart. Despite what Trina had said last night, I couldn't shake the worry that Kestra might be right about the Olden Blade. Tengger's entire plan was built on the premise that we would find it. What if it couldn't be found? What would happen then? The fact that the Haldarians also knew Kestra was returning to Highwon only complicated an already precarious mission. The Haldarian clan and the Korax had similar goals, to remove Lord Endric from power. But the Haldarians mistrusted us, thinking that all we wanted was a back door to the throne. And maybe Tengger did. He had resisted any effort for the two groups to unite, saying he would not sacrifice his men to put a Haldarian on the throne.
If we find the blade, then we can choose the Infidant,
Tengger had said in his final speech to us before we launched this mission.
And the Infidant will choose the next king. Why shouldn't Antora kneel before a Korak?
I'd cheered along with everyone else at the time, with no idea then how I'd be drawn deeper into Tengger's plan. And now I had to complete this mission. It required me to separate Kestra entirely from my feelings. Maybe in time I could forget my anger, or forgive her naive view of the world. But how could I ignore the emotions she had stirred in me last night? Feelings that only intensified the more I tried to shake them off. With the same mischievous smile as before, Kestra turned to me and asked, "Why do you always stare at me?" I shifted my eyes to the road ahead. "I don't. You were just now. Tell me why." "You remind me of a girl I once hated, that's all." Her smile fell. "Did you really hate me back then?" "If anything, I'd liked her more than someone of my station ever should have dared. I recalled one summer's day when she was 9, and I'd seen her dancing alone in the gardens. Her dress had twisted in a perfect circle as she swirled around, the beads on her scarf reflecting pops of light. The head servant caught me looking, and I lost a full day's meal. Kestra probably never knew I'd been there. I never hated you," I mumbled, until that day. Now Kestra became serious and lowered her voice to a near whisper. "How do the Banished know Trina?" "Can you use their names, please?"
"The Haldarians."
"How do they know her, Simon? Thorn told Trina he knew her."
"Trina denied it."
"No, she laughed at him. That's different." I pinched the bridge of my nose. What had started as a headache back at the inn was quickly becoming a thunderstorm inside my head.
"What's your point?"
"My point is that she's working with them. If she was, then why would he have to say that he knew her?
He'd know her and she'd know him. He wouldn't have to say it."
"Forget that," she scowled. "How does he know her?"
"How does he know Darrow?"
I countered.
"Why did Darrow arrange with the Haldarians to meet you at that inn?"
"He obviously didn't share that detail." She bit down on her lip and looked away. Clearly that bothered her. A vulnerability I would absolutely use to my advantage. I continued. "Darrow apologized to you last night.
Why?"
"Maybe for failing to protect me from you.
Maybe for turning you over to the Haldarians."
She fell silent, and stubbornly faced forward without saying another word.
Good. I needed the break.
After another hour of riding, we passed through a dismal market that looked like the center of what had been a nice town once, probably before the war. A grand fountain had dried up and filled with leaves, its foundation cracked. A church in the distance had been looted down to its frame and steeple. The few homes that remained had disintegrated into little more than dried mud and bundled reed shacks. The coming winter rains would destroy what was left of them. A fair number of people were here, so it was likely the only market within miles. I heard a passerby call this place Pitwill. A sad name for an even sadder place. I leaned toward Kestra to whisper in her ear. "Keep your head down. A Dalasaur shouldn't be alone in a group like this." "I'm not alone. I have you and Trina." She tilted her head. "Oh, I see what you mean. I might as well be alone." She could mock me if she wanted, but I'd been trying to help. "What I mean is that nearly everyone here is trying to survive beneath the might of Lord Endric's immortal fist. They know the Dalasaurs enforce his cruelty, and nobody here would lose any sleep if they showed you what being crushed feels like." "They wouldn't dare." I hoped her show of arrogance was a mask to soothe her nerves. If it wasn't, this simple ride through town could go badly. I tried again. "Stop looking around, and cover your dress with your cloak. It's too elegant for these parts."
"You chose it? I'd be better off in the ripped one from last night."
"I hardly think a skirt ripped halfway up your thigh would keep people from noticing you." I followed that with a chuckle that sounded fake and forced, which it was. We rode deeper into the market, passing vendors selling cloth and bonnets that a lot of women were staring at, but nobody was buying, and fat cuts of meat that practically made the men drool. Disc bows were laid out on another counter, but they were cheaply made,
with blunt-edged discs that wouldn't cut through a summer breeze. No one had money for luxuries here, although payment wasn't always made in coins. To avoid the heavy taxes, a lot of under-the-table bargaining happened in places like this. Kestra probably had no idea of any of it. In her world, she ordered what she wanted from a servant and never saw the faces of those who were slowly starving to death. Proof of that was in her next question. Why are the people so poor here? Here? Trina, riding near us, scoffed. Get 5 minutes of distance from Hywin, and you'll see it's like this everywhere. Last year, Endric demanded 3/4 of everything the people produced. When they protested, he came in and took all of it. There was a lot of starvation over the winter, and a lot of deaths. Simon and I both lost friends. Fewer rebels in Antora? Good. But as she spoke, Kestra's shoulders slumped a little. I knew firsthand how winters passed in the Dalasaur households. No family member ever suffered a hungry or cold night. If they lacked something, they sent soldiers to pilfer it from the defenseless. If Kestra had never wondered where all her niceties came from, then it was about time for her to find out. There was a reason the only line in this market was for the cheapest item available. Bread. The girl selling it couldn't have been older than 11 or 12. And I overheard as she introduced herself as Rosalie to a customer in line. The hems of her skirt were frayed and dirty, but she was clean otherwise. Not that it mattered. I smelled her bread from here, and even if she were covered in dung, I'd still have wanted a loaf. I'd eaten worse before. At the moment, Rosalie was being pestered by a woman who insisted she should get a better price because she bought bread every day.
I can't, Rosalie protested. I don't set the price.
The woman got louder, and Rosalie more anxious, enough that she didn't see a young boy sneaking up on the back of the stall. He took one loaf, and when he got away with that, he put 3 more loaves under his arm and scampered away. Kestra had been observing him, too. I asked, "Is he a criminal, or is he simply hungry? I suspect he's both." Then with a humbler tone, she added, "But I see your point. He should be fed, not arrested."
"Rosalie, you stupid girl!"
A man appeared from a small tent behind us, putrid enough to offend the common pig.
"We just had more bread stolen! I warned you last time!"
He shoved it to the ground, yelling,
"You'll pay for that!"
"No, she won't," Kestra mumbled. Before I realized her intentions, she slipped beneath my arms and jumped off the horse. The man hadn't yet noticed Kestra. Instead, he picked up a stick from the ground and raised it against Rosalie. From behind, Kestra grabbed his upraised arm and locked it with hers, while with the other arm, she put a knife against his throat. I felt for my sheath and cursed. When did she take my knife? Again. That had been a masterful move on Kestra's part. More reason to worry about exactly who we had captured. Kestra was naive, but she was also dangerous. "Run," Kestra said to Rosalie, who merely stood there, frozen with fear. I slid off the horse, one hand on my sword, approaching Kestra like I would a frightened child. "Let this man go. Dominion soldiers will be here. Let's not call their attention to us."
"You will be arrested for this," the man said. "Rosalie is my property to deal with in my own way."
"She's no one's property," Kestra said, "and no longer your concern." Rosalie probably was his property. Something else Kestra had yet to learn about her country. Indenturement wasn't exactly legal, but the Dominion always overlooked it. At my continued urging, Kestra released the man, and he turned to face her, then laughed, revealing several missing teeth.
"Well, you ain't more than a child yourself. A wealthy one, too, I can tell. Pay me enough, and you can take Rosalie with you."
The knife twisted in Kestra's hand. "How dare you demand payment? I just told her she's free to go." His beady eyes narrowed further.
"Oh, you told her? Like you're something special? If she tries to leave, she'll pay for it."
Kestra turned to Rosalie. "Run! I'll take care of this." And this time, Rosalie left, though she only crossed the square and crouched beside a small wooden fence, huddled, waiting to see what would happen next. The man immediately cried out,
"Thieves! Arrest these two!"
I grabbed Kestra's hand, trying to pull her back toward our horse, but she shook it free, and instead landed a fist on the man's fleshy jaw. As he reeled backward, she said, "We cannot steal what cannot be owned!"
"Stop!"
Two Dominion soldiers ran forward, wearing black uniforms with a green stripe across the shoulders. Endrick's colors. I'd already noticed their eyes, glazed over, looking, but not truly seeing. These were iron hearts. Through those eyes, Endrick might not be aware of everything happening here, but then again, he might. Either way, this was a disaster. One soldier grabbed Kestra, but she twisted around and with a steady voice said, "My name is Kestra Dalasor. You will release me at once." Her voice was firm as she spoke.
Dalasors never hesitated to say their name,
especially to inferiors, which they figured everyone was. Except Lord Endrick, of course.
"Daughter of Sir Henry Dalasor."
The soldier who spoke immediately dipped his head at Kestra and let her go.
"We heard your father was bringing you home. Our apologies."
She nodded at Rosalie, still crouched near the fence. "You will not threaten that girl. On my orders."
"No, my lady, of course not. If you are headed to Highwyn, it would be our honor to escort you there."
"It would also be their honor to arrest me and Trina and escort us to Highwyn as their trophies. I didn't know these men, or at least I didn't think I did, but I defended plenty of soldiers before. It was possible they knew me." Kestra gestured at me. "I've already got a protector. He'll take me home." I straightened up in a lame attempt to look confident, but based on my rigid smile, the soldiers had to be wondering if I had thorns inside my boots. If only my life were that simple.
"Your young protector was unable to keep you out of trouble here," the second soldier said dismissively. "We'll get our oropods and meet you back on the main road."
Kestra agreed, far too readily, and my temper warmed. As soon as they were gone, I marched over to her.
"This is perfect. Are you going to have Trina and me arrested now, or wait until we're closer to your father's dungeons?"
"I did us a favor," she hissed. "If they accept you two as my servants, nobody in Highwyn will question it. I just got you both inside Woodcourt's gates. Escorted by guards whose careers will be made if they figure out who Trina and I are. All you do is make things worse." I pointed to Rosalie.
"Do you think you helped her?
Where will she work tomorrow, and the day after that?
You've doomed her, and probably her entire family."
Kestra's cheeks reddened before she shoved past me, and crossed over to Rosalie. She removed her cloak and wrapped it around Rosalie's shoulders, then knelt in front of her.
"Your family needs to find another place to live, far enough away that you don't have to work in this market."
Rosalie's lower lip quivered.
"We have no money to leave."
"You do now." Kestra held out a hand to me, but I was already on my way with her bag of coins. I gave them to Kestra, who passed them to Rosalie.
"I'm so sorry," Kestra said. "I was trying to help."
Rosalie nodded back, as if to acknowledge that Kestra hadn't intended any of this. It didn't matter. Kestra looked wounded, stripped of her Dalasor superiority. I almost pitied her. When she stood again, I took her arm. "Our escorts will be waiting." My tone was gentle. After what had just happened, Kestra would scold herself far worse than I ever could. This time, she went with me. Every face in the market watched her leave, none of them in a friendly way, and I knew she felt it. One hand was on my sword, but nobody would try anything, not with Dominion soldiers nearby. Trina was still on her horse, holding the reins for the mount we had been riding. Her face was nearly purple with anger. Before climbing on the horse, Kestra paused to say, "I didn't know places like this existed. And I didn't know how to respond to words filled with such sadness." I finally said, "Dalasors do not live in the same world as the rest of us." She gave a half-hearted shrug. "That's why everyone thinks Dalasors are horrible people, right? Because we support a ruler who allows such a country as this? Maybe we are horrible. Maybe I am, and I never knew it. Maybe. Or there was a thought that bothered me more. Maybe she wasn't horrible at all. Despite my efforts to pretend otherwise, she had gotten into my head. stirring up emotions that kept my breath lodged in my throat whenever I looked at her. I could tell myself this was only the energy between rivals, or the stress of the mission we were about to undertake. But that'd be a lie. Whatever I felt, it was real, and growing stronger. I'd sooner divide the sun from its light than separate Kestra Dalasor from my feelings.
Chapter 13. Kestra. As awful as I felt upon leaving Pitwill, what remained of the ride into Hywin only worsened my mood. The poverty we saw on our journey was rampant, with empty shops, abandoned or neglected homes, and children in overgrown fields foraging for scraps to eat. This was good land. Where were the people who used to tend it? Meanwhile, I was headed home to a manor of brick and stone, with deep woven carpets and plush bedding. At each meal we'd be offered more food than we could possibly consume, and every day I'd have my choice of new dresses to wear. I was utterly ashamed of myself. How could I not know these realities of life outside of Hywin? Behind me, Simon barely said a word for the entire ride, if his occasional mumbles could be considered that much. Trina kept quiet, too, which was a relief. If we weren't being escorted, they'd have had plenty to say about what a terrible person I was, how I'd ruined Rosalie's life. Perhaps a comparison of me and the average rabid skunk. Trina could say any of that, and it would roll off me without leaving a scratch. But I didn't want to hear it from Simon. I'd spent much of this ride replaying in my head the way he'd looked at me last night, while we hid inside the wall. His hands on my face and back. The warmth of his expression. Him. It was all a game to distract me from the trouble outside while I was distracting him from his knife. I knew that. Nothing that had happened there was real. But I wondered what it would be like to see that gentleness in his eyes again. When he meant it. From there, my thoughts descended to dangerous levels. Lord Endrick was not a tolerant man. That was something I'd always understood, even when very young. Before she died, my mother had been afraid of him, and taught me to be afraid, too. She'd kept me hidden every time he came to our home. She whispered about the violence of his magic, and the casual cruelty of his heart. I accidentally encountered him once, when he'd come for a supper, and remembered him saying that he'd forgotten Henry Dalasor even had a daughter. Then he'd ordered me away, claiming that I had the look of trouble in my eyes. I'd gone to a looking glass from there, searching my face for what he might have meant. It was years before I understood it, and before I saw that same look, too. The official Dominion explanation for Endrick's harsh rule was that it was forced upon Entora by the uncooperative masses, by the Korak rebels who terrorized the countryside, and by the occasional appearance of a Haldarian, which always caused unrest as people wondered if they would bring back another war. Nobody wanted that. Certainly not me. Even if things were bad, maybe it was best to let everything remain as it was. Trying to help only made lives worse. Rosalie proved that. But what if Tengar was right? What if the Oldenblade was real, and the Infinaut could be found among the banished to claim it? If that was true, then I was playing a role in Endrick's downfall, and my own family's downfall, and possibly the collapse of Entora itself. A wave of nausea rose in me, forcing my hands into fists to fight it back. I had always loved my country, but what if I only loved the idea of it, of what Entora could have been if anyone else were on that throne? Maybe I'd spent a lifetime staring at a glossy painting of Entora, beautiful and rich in color, but which was actually rotting beneath the surface. If that was true, then there were other questions I had to ask, with answers that could earn my execution. What if saving Entora required Lord Endrick's destruction? What if the Koraks were right? Simon touched my arm, and I jumped. Are you all right? You seem nervous. Nervous? No. I was unnerved, and completely unsure of what I was meant to do next.
I just had to get home, back to what was familiar, and center myself again. Then everything would be all right. I'm fine, I said to Simon. It was a lie, but I made myself believe it, at least until the worst of the nausea passed. Crossing into the capital city of Hywin required us to pass between the sentries, two blue granite statues so enormous that on horseback we were barely taller than the toe of a sentry's foot. The one to our right stood as a warning to all who came, his sword outstretched and body in a fighting posture. The one to the left faced toward the city, its sword sheathed, an arm outstretched, an invitation to leave in peace. The sentries had been built by the Dalasors during our family's earliest days in power. My mother once told me that Endric hated them, felt dwarfed by them, but had never destroyed them for fear of losing our family's support. Immediately after crossing the sentry's gate, the hills of Hywin rose before us. The capital city was grand and regal, its streets clean and in good repair. Buildings were close together and stood tall. Each new layer upon the city became increasingly elegant as Hywin's height grew along with its wealth. Numerous suspended bridges overhead connected the various buildings, leaving the narrow streets for animals and carriages. My father often described post-war Antora as an empire in eternal blossom, reflecting the immortality of its lord. But if that were true, how would he explain what I'd seen in the countryside, in Pitwill? The Lord of the Dominion's green and black colors waved in flags hung over most building entrances. The streets remained busy for most hours of the day, populated by loyalists or those who wanted Dominion favors. And the deeper we went into the city, the tighter Simon's hand gripped his sword, and the more ashen Trina's face became. I figured I was still more nervous than the two of them combined. They were risking their lives for this mission, but so was I. If they succeeded in obtaining the Olden Blade, I would also lose my honor, what was left of my family, and any future I might have otherwise had. But with soldiers as our escorts, none of us could go back now. In the center of town, an ancient Haldarian monument dedicated to the citizens of Antora was gradually being replaced with a grand statue of Lord Endric. I'd been told it would be completed by spring, and then the entire country would celebrate it together. After what I'd seen earlier today, I knew people would stand in the streets when commanded to do so, with smiles on their faces and cursing us under their breaths. The higher we climbed the hills of Hywin, the more Dalasor family homes could be seen. They were easily identified by the Dalasor crest on the gates, a shield with the upper half depicting the conquering sword of Gridwyn Dalasor, and the lower half a solid red, representing the Scarlet Throne of Antora. It was a source of family pride, and I assumed, of pain as well. The throne belonged to Lord Endric now. Of all the houses on the hill, my home, Woodcourt, stood highest among them all. That was because of my father's position in the kingdom, Lord Endric's coziest lapdog. The Dominion Palace sat highest on the hills of Hywin, almost as if Woodcourt itself bowed to Lord Endric, which I supposed was accurate enough. I'd never been allowed inside, nor had I ever asked to enter. Despite its glistening marble walls, the palace felt dark to me, a tomb for an immortal lord. Up here, near the palace walls, it wasn't hard to know when Endric's condors were near. Their screeches carried for almost a mile, and always left my ears ringing. Endric had created his own breed of the bird, born of magic and his unquenchable thirst for death. Each was large enough to carry a grown man, and had talons that could rip flesh. At the palace they were caged and fed live animals by their riders to keep them both loyal and bloodthirsty. They flew higher than any opposing weapon could reach, and their trained riders carried shoulder cannons with leaden fire pellets that exploded anything and anyone they landed on. Nothing in Antora had yet withstood their attack.
"What is making those sounds?"
Trina hissed over at Simon. He said nothing. He knew, which meant he had probably seen them in action. I never had, and I never wanted to.
It was a relief when our road bent away from the palace toward my home. Woodcourt was L-shaped with a circular tower at its center. Gray granite blocks made up most of the exterior, along with white shuttered windows and a gabled roof. There were several entrances into Woodcourt, the main doors in the tower for guests and members of the household, another for servants, one for the vast gardens that extended to the rear of the home, and another one set just outside the gates for prisoners to be escorted directly into the dungeons, unseen and unsmelled. One word from me and these soldiers would use that entrance for Simon and Trina. The temptation of it was difficult to shake from my mind. The soldiers left us at the main gate into Woodcourt with polite bows. I thanked them for their service. Simon and Trina didn't even acknowledge them, which was both rude and foolish. Real servants would have expressed gratitude for their protection. The three of us slid off our mounts, and Simon walked the two horses through the main gates. Trina almost immediately recoiled, then pointed forward, saying,
"What is that?"
When I saw who she was looking at, I hissed back at Trina to shut her mouth. Celia had already warned me about my father's household manager, so at least one of us here wouldn't behave like an idiot. He was of medium height, with a plump body, bald head, and blue skin, or grayish blue, to be more specific. He must have seen Trina's reaction, but he ignored it and turned to me. We exchanged polite bows. Then he said, "My name is Gerald Bones. I am the manager of Woodcourt. Are you Miss Dalasor? Your father expected your arrival today."
"I am."
My formal tone matched his. "With me is a guard, Simon, and my handmaiden, Trina." Gerald raised a hairless brow when he noticed them.
"Your handmaiden is supposed to be Celia. I chose her for you myself."
"You chose a stupid and lazy girl. I released her and selected my own handmaiden." It was a question I'd anticipated, so my answer was ready. But it felt like a betrayal to describe Celia so cruelly, after her months of patience with me. It was also a ridiculous excuse, considering that Trina was still staring at him as if she'd forgotten how to blink. "I have a condition," Gerald said at last, uncomfortable beneath her gawking. "I'm as human as you, only blue." This was the word Trina used to shake herself from her trance.
"Speak so rudely again, and you'll go to work in the laundry,"
I scolded, then returned my attention to Gerald. "Forgive my handmaiden, sir. Clearly, she's even less intelligent than Celia was." Gerald grunted and turned toward Simon, who had made himself busy with our horses that needed no attending whatsoever.
"We expected a man named Darrow to bring you back, in a security carriage, and with a garrison accompanying you. They're all dead."
Simon spoke stiffly, clearly uncomfortable.
"Lady Kestra's carriage was attacked at the inn where she stayed last night. I rescued her and came on as her protector."
Thinking of the soldiers and why they died, I clenched my teeth, an angry retort at the tip of my tongue. But not in front of Gerald. Not in front of any servant of my father. Instead, I offered Gerald a wry smile. "These two aren't much, but I intend to keep them. For now." Gerald dipped his head at me.
"Very well, my lady. Your protector can attend to the horses while your handmaiden prepares your bath for a special supper tonight. Your father asked to see you as soon as you arrive."
Simon and Trina exchanged a wary look. One so obvious I would have to discuss it with them later. Neither of them seemed to like the idea of being separated from me this soon, but what had they expected? It would never be tolerated for servants to follow me around Woodcourt. After Gerald moved out of earshot, I whispered to Simon,
"Either you trust me or you don't."
His gaze on me was steady.
"I don't."
For some reason, that made me smile. I took his words as a challenge to a game I fully intended to win. He should already know how comfortable I was with cheating. He didn't like seeing me smile, and certainly didn't return it, which only made me enjoy the moment more. I said to him,
"Nor should you trust me. Now go attend to those horses."
Then I called to Trina,
"Draw a hot bath for me, and have some food waiting in my room. If you do a good job, you can have my scraps." I felt rage rising in her, which gave me a particularly satisfied smile. I swerved on my heel to follow Gerald into Woodcourt, never looking back.